coronated as the Democratic presidential nominee up the block to square up against Trump 2.0 in November. Now, to many, I think this is a bit of a relief, being that Biden has the blood of over 40,000 Palestinians on his hands. He has failed to deliver on his most basic campaign promises, raising the minimum wage, canceling all student debt, making healthcare affordable, taking up the climate crisis. The list goes on and on. He has continued many of Trump-era policies, increased drilling. Under his administration, the far right has grown, and the Democrats, like they usually do, have not put up a real defense against them. For example, we all watched in 2022 when they rolled over and Roe v. Wade was overturned with no real fight back. And what did they say? Vote for us, we'll protect abortion rights. This is the legacy that Harris, if elected, would continue. So the question is, how can we, as working people, actually fight for change in the encroachment of the far right? This week, Socialist Alternative has joined protesters in the streets who want to see an end to the bloody attacks on Gaza, as well as an end to US military funding. We also joined picket lines alongside nurses with the Illinois Nurses Union that have been on strike since Monday, demanding a 40% pay increase over 3 years, better staffing, and better safety, setting an example for working people everywhere need right now. So, while elections play an important role, and we argue for the strongest vote possible against Harris and Trump this November, politics don't start nor end at the ballot box. Right. It is up to ordinary people everywhere, not only in the US, but around the world, to take matters into their own hands and fight for people over profits. So, in that spirit, we have an amazing speaker lineup tonight of activists and union workers from here to England to Germany, where we have sister sections of International Socialist Alternative to discuss what it will take in this moment to get organized and fight for a better world, a socialist world. So now I'd like to introduce our first speaker, who will be Ryan Watson, a member of Socialist Alternative's Black Caucus. With a decade of experience in the socialist movement, he's appeared on Revolutionary Blackout Network and as a speaker at one of Chicago's largest BLM rallies. So let's give a round of applause.
Comrades, brothers, sisters, siblings, August 2nd, 2024 would have been James Baldwin's 100th birthday. So I hope to channel him and the best of him for this speech tonight. I think in a world that wants to blame the ills of capitalism on the new generation while delivering a doomed image of the world, including the deaths of children in the thousands from war and in the millions, no hyperbole, from poverty. 44 years ago, James Baldwin said, "The children are always ours, every single one of them, all over the globe, and I am beginning to suspect that whoever is incapable of recognizing this may be incapable of morality." Or I am saying, in other words, that we, the elders, are the only models children have. What we see in the children is what they have seen in us, or more accurately perhaps, what they see in us. He goes on to say, "I too find that a rather chilling formulation, but I can find no way around it. How am I, for example, to explain to any of my tribe of nieces and nephews, or great nieces and great nephews, how it happens that in a nation so boastfully autonomous as the United States, we are reduced to the present presidential candidates?" 1980. Like many others who, with integrity in their fight for civil rights and human rights, shifted his analysis from that of wishing a higher consciousness would fix the ills of the world to an account in which the end of racism entailed the end of capitalism. I'm going to build on this. We stand here today as a crucial moment in history, A moment where the very survival of our planet and the dignity of billions of people are at stake. As we face war, poverty, oppression, environmental destruction, it is clear that these crises are not accidental, nor are they the product of isolated policy failures. They are the inevitable consequence of a system that puts profits over people, a system that is rotten to its very core. I'm talking about capitalism. Capitalism, by its very nature, necessitates the exploitation of many for the benefits of the few. The relentless pursuit of profit, regardless of the human or environmental cost, is the beating heart of this system. It is the system where a handful of billionaires control more wealth than billions of people combined, where corporations can poison our air, our water, and our soil in their quest for an ever greater return. And where governments bought and paid for by these corporations turn a blind eye to the suffering they cause. This is the reality of capitalism, and it is the reality that we must reject if we are to have any hopes of a better future. As we confront the failures of capitalism, we must also recognize that the political system in the United States is designed to maintain the status quo. The two major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, are both deeply entrenched in the capitalist system, from tax cuts to the wealthy to the deregulations of industry. Both parties have consistently prioritized the interests of corporations over the needs of workers.
That's right.
They may differ in rhetoric, they may differ in race, gender, or sexual orientation, but when it comes to serving the interests of big business, they are two sides of the very same coin. Kamala Harris, who has been portrayed as some kind of progressive champion, is no exception to this rule. Her record shows a consistent alignment with the corporate interests. As a prosecutor, she was known for being tough on crime, but against who? Because it wasn't corporate crime. She has received substantial backing from Wall Street and Silicon Valley. In fact, in 2019, when there was 20 plus candidates in the Democratic primary, Kamala had the most billionaire donors than any of the Democrats running for president. Ooh. Moreover, her policies reflect the interests of her corporate donors. They hope that by focusing on her identity, they can distract from the fact that she, like so many other Democrats, is deeply tied to this capitalist system. And when they ask me, do you support black women? I'll say yes, I stand with black women. Just I think there's a question of which black women do I stand with? And when they are in opposition to each other, a progressive prosecutor who jailed the parents of kids who were truant because capitalism's high prices and low wages leaves them with multiple jobs and latchkey children who were not exclusively, but overwhelmingly black moms, I stand with those black moms and not Kamala Harris. The left cannot afford to fall into the trap of supporting politicians who serve the interests of big business. No matter how progressive they may seem on the surface, we must look beyond the personalities and the focuses on the policies that they promote. And when these policies fail to address the root causes of our problem, we must be willing to challenge the system itself. The Democrats, despite holding power, have failed to address the root cause of economic insecurity, cultural anxiety, and disillusionment that fuels Trumpism. If the Democrats had genuinely addressed the needs of workers, young people, and the oppressed, Trump's base wouldn't have continued to grow. But instead, we have seen more of the same: empty promises, incremental reforms that do not challenge the status quo, and a refusal to take on the entrenched power of the billionaire class. This has left a vacuum that Trump and other right-wing populists have eagerly filled. The danger of lesser evilism cannot be overstated. For decades, the left has been told to vote for the lesser evil, to hold its nose and support the Democrats because they are not as bad as the Republicans. But where has that strategy gotten us? The reality is that lesser evilism has only weakened the left and emboldened the right. We were told to vote for Biden, the most pro-labor president since FDR, which, low bar, who turned around and pushed the boss's bill to undermine the railroad strike, pushing railroad workers towards the right, undoubtedly. The power to stop the right does not come from voting for the lesser evil, but from building powerful, independent movements that can challenge the system as a whole and build a party with a force that can mobilize the working class and oppressed communities to fight for real change. Given the failure of the two-party system and the growing threat of the far right, it is clear that we need a new political party, independent of corporate money and dedicated to representing the interests of working people. If the Democrats lose to Trump in the next election, it will be their own fault. Their failure to deliver on their promises has allowed Trump's support to grow, and even if Trump wins, the Democrats will not be the solution. When the Democrats do engage with grassroots movements, it is to co-opt, derail them into a dead-end electoral politics. We saw this recently, just 4 years ago, with the Black Lives Matter movement, where Democratic politicians expressed support for the protest, and what do we have? Betrayals and little to show. And is this the basis for Black Lives Matter? Has it been moved? Has it been improved? Well, I'll tell you, as a Black Chicagoan, with a Black Democratic progressive mayor, according to Campaign Zero, findings show this year, Black Chicagoans are 30.6 times more likely to be killed by the police than their white residents. In the intermediate, we call for a vote for Jill Stein, the most viable left-wing anti-war independent candidate. Let's put some demands to have Stein on the presidential debate stage along with Harris and Trump. Demand our unions to rescind their endorsements of Harris or Trump and stop the millions to capitalist organizations bent on attacking unions and put them towards a pro-worker candidate in 2024. It's time to break from the two-party system that perpetuates capitalism and systemic racism. We need a new party that is committed to radical demands, and structural change, addressing the root causes of economic and racial injustice through socialist policies. As we confront these crises, we must also recognize that we are not alone in our struggle. The Trumpism that represents the US side of the phenomenon is just one part of the right-wing populism. The global crisis of capitalism has fueled the rise of far-right movements across the world, from Bolsonaro in Brazil to Modi in India to Le Pen in France. These movements, while different in their specific ideologies, share a common thread. They all seek to divide the working class along lines of race, religion, and nationality while defending the interests of the capitalist class. And one of the most glaring and urgent examples of capitalism's failure is climate crisis. Right. Yeah. Climate change is not just an environmental issue. It is a direct result of capitalism's insatiable demand for the profits at any cost. The scale of the crisis demand systemic change, not just personal responsibilities like recycling. We need to dismantle the fossil fuel industry and replace it with a system of public ownership and democratic control over energy production. We need to invest in renewable energy and create millions of good union jobs in the process. But most importantly, we need to recognize that capitalism is incompatible with a sustainable future. The fight against climate change is a fight against capitalism itself. We must fight for immediate gains, for sure. We must also recognize that under capitalism, no victory is permanent. The gains that we win can always be rolled back as long as capitalist class remains in power. This is why our ultimate goal must be to overthrow the system of capitalism itself and replace it with socialism. Yes. A system where the wealth and resources of society are democratically controlled by the working class for the benefit of all of us, not just the few. The ongoing conflict in Gaza is a stark example of how capitalism perpetuates oppression and war. The Israeli state, backed by powerful capitalist interests and imperialist powers, has consistently pursued policies that dispossess and brutalize the Palestinian people. This is not just about territorial disputes, it is about maintaining control over resources, securing economic and military dominance in the region, and upholding the interests of the global capital system. It is not just Gaza either. From Iraq to Afghanistan,
From Syria to Yemen, we see the same pattern. Wars driven by the interests of capital, wars fought over resources, strategic dominance, and markets. Wars that bring untold suffering to millions of people while enriching a tiny few. The capitalist system, which needs constant growth and new markets, thrives on these conflicts. War is profitable for arms dealers, the contractors, the oil companies, and the financial institution that backs them. And while these entities rake in billions, ordinary people bear the brunt, losing lives, homes, and futures.
Unacceptable.
The oppression of entire people, whether through occupation, economic exploitation, or racial and ethnic discrimination, is also a tool of capitalism. By dividing the working class and pitting groups against each other, the ruling class can maintain its power and keep us from uniting against our common enemy. You can't understand the need for solidarity between black and brown Chicagoans and beyond, and migrants without understanding capitalism. We are fighting for a better world, a world free from exploitation, oppression, and environmental destruction. A world where the wealth of society is used to meet the needs of all people, not to line the pockets of a few. Together, we can build a movement that can challenge the power of the billionaire class and create a future where all people can live in dignity and peace. I'm going to end as I started with the James Baldwin quote. I can't be a pessimist because I'm alive. To be a pessimist means that you have to agree that human life is an academic matter. So I am forced to be an optimist. I am forced to believe that we can survive whatever we must survive. Solidarity.
Thanks so much, Ryan. As Ryan spoke to, capitalism is a global system, so it requires a global struggle. The encroachment of the far right is a global phenomenon. So our next speaker, who is part of our sister section in Germany, is only 18 years old. I think for young people especially, the future is looking bleak, and it's their time to move into struggle. She was an active participant in fighting the far right, took part in the anti-FFD protests in January, which brought 1.5 million people to the streets in Germany. So her perspective will be vital in building a movement against the far right and Trumpism in the US. So next up, we have Monia Repka.
Hi, my name is Monia. I'm 18 years old. I'm from Sozialistische Alternative, which is the German sister organization of Socialist Alternative in the US. Germany is a country which earlier this year was shaken by the largest protest wave in its history. In only one weekend, 1.5 million people flooded the streets, calling to put a stop to the extreme right party, AfD, and their racist and misogynistic ideology. Like many countries across the world, we're facing an alarming right-wing shift. And since half the world population has or will face elections just this year, many of us rightfully fear what consequences a conservative or right-wing populist government could have. Election results from Argentina, the Netherlands, Portugal, and Germany remind us of just how real that threat is, especially in case of a second Donald Trump presidency in the US. We're seeing widespread attacks on women and queer people's bodily autonomy. There's an upsurge in gender-based violence and a rise of misogynistic ideas, especially among young men. They're being preyed upon by online figures like Andrew Tate, who are spreading and strengthening dangerous gender roles, teaching young men to be tough, strong, disattached, emotionless, whereas women are nothing more than sexual and maternal objects. Those kinds of ideas do not stay on the internet. And many of us know exactly how dangerous it is for a young woman to walk home alone, to go on a date, to state our opinion, how dangerous it can be to try to break up with our partners. Under capitalism, we're taught that other people are entitled to our bodies and lives. It's a system that forces women into a specific role, fits people into an idea of gender that is necessary to uphold this traditional concept of family. A lot of the violence that women and queer people face happens when we try to break out of this role. But that's important because it shows a kind of systemic fragility. These roads are crucial to be able to ideologically justify the privatization of care and household work to minimize expenses because it's just the woman's way. Abortion rights are extremely important because they represent the fight for the choice of whether or not people who are able to birth children actually want to do so. Even in countries in which they are legal or especially decriminalized, like in Germany, they are still not automatically covered by public health insurance, pushing poor people once again to cheaper, unsafe methods. Because making abortion illegal or inaccessible will never stop people from having them. This leads to more than 65,000 unnecessary deaths every year. And whether or not a person is going to have access to a safe procedure is, in the end, heavily determined by class. Can you afford to pay for a medical professional? Can you afford to go out of state? Over the past years, our sister organizations in Latin America have been part of the Green Wave movement, the struggle to gain access to legal and safe abortion. These protests come from a place of necessity in a region with some of the strictest abortion bans in the world, and they brought thousands and thousands out to the streets, a movement that has played a significant role in winning abortion rights in Argentina and Mexico. But the fight is not easy, and it's not over. Brazil was actually one of the countries close to joining the Green Wave just a year ago, but there's been a harsh backlash. Brazilian people are now up against a proposed law change that would equate abortion to homicide, with a penalty of up to 20 years. That is twice the sentence of a rapist. Especially in recent years, we cannot take our rights for granted. Many Americans voted for Biden last term, not because they still believed he would make things better, but because they thought it would at least not get worse. And the past 4 years have shown us very clearly that that is not true. It was 2 years into Democrat presidency that Roe v. Wade was overturned. 2 years since Biden promised during his election campaign to achieve legal abortion. 2 years in which it would have been easy to do so. In fact, Democrats have had the chance for 50 years since Roe v. Wade to codify it into federal law. But when Dobbs was leaked, even though they were in control of the White House and Congress, they failed to take any action to defend our right to bodily self-determination. We've seen over and over and over again that we cannot rely on the Democrats to stand for our interests. They represent themselves, the careerists, the bosses, the billionaires. They don't care about us. But that's the thing, because we don't need them. We have the power to fight for our own interest, and working people all over the world are doing exactly that. Just this year, mass protests in Kenya managed to fight off the government's finance bill, which was essentially a drastic tax raise meant to combat the debt crisis on the backs of already poor people. Just these past few days, medical professionals in India have taken to the streets in a national strike to protest the sexual abuse and murder of a trainee colleague. The entirety of Bangladesh has been shaken by the student-led revolt against the reimplication of an undemocratic government quota, an uprising that spread like wildfire, connecting to topics like the unemployment, working condition, and poverty crises in Bangladesh, uniting unions, targeting the crucial textile sector to hit the regime at its core, its profits, and ultimately driving the prime minister to resign and flee the country. And I find this one to be especially significant because it shows the kind of role that young people are able to play in movements. Many times it is young people, young women at the forefront, leading the way out to the streets. Like in Bangladesh, in Iran, like in the university occupation wave around Gaza, spreading all the way from the US to my hometown in Germany. All these uprisings have faced extreme violence and repression because the ruling class knows what power working class people can have if they get organized. We need direct working class representation that is genuinely on our side, the side of the youth, the oppressed, the side of the working class. We need to organize independently in the workplace, in school, in university, and out on the streets. We need to build a place with democratic structures, no careerists, where we can defend the scraps of liberty and security we still have under capitalism, so we can fight the system that brought us into this chaos of war and oppression, and ultimately show the way out. With billion-dollar companies and the far right fighting on the other side, we cannot reform the system from within. We need to rip it off like a band-aid, take working-class control of production and politics, build a system that is made for the interest of working people and the planet. We're fighting for a socialist world revolution.
Thanks so much, Monia, for that. As you spoke about, movements around the world are making the bosses scared, and we need to face them not only in the streets, but in the workplaces. So our next speaker is going to be talking about the resurgence of the labor movement in the US. Sarah Deffenbach, an REI worker and organizing committee member, recently successfully organized a union at their store. So where did I hear from them? Come on up.
Hello, everybody. I'm Sarah, and my pronouns are they, them, and that's really important. I'm really happy to be back here tonight with Socialist Alternative for this public meeting. I was invited to speak at the June Pride meeting about my experience in helping organize a union with the RWDSU at REI and the intersections of being queer and non-binary, working in a retail environment in late-stage capitalism. Our union fight is still going strong at REI. We are currently fighting for a contract now, and we may have some movement happening soon with our unfair labor practice charges that we've brought against the company, and there are so many of them, and they continue to grow. We also are about to enter our Labor Day sale this Friday. Woo! So you may have a chance to support us in action in the near future, and you can follow REI Union or REI Union Chicago for more information on that. I grew up in a union home. My dad was in the Carpenters Union until his death in 2014. So my experience with unions and working class struggles is lifelong. The first presidential election that I voted in was in 2008, the historic election of Barack Obama. And I've been thinking about that. I think about that time and my own excitement and my own hope. And I was so excited to vote for a black man because I had not yet woken up to the fact that the two-party system was designed to keep workers fighting against each other when we should really be fighting for one another and fighting against our bosses. Now, today, all I can see is how with each and every election, there is no real progress. The thought of unionizing scares a lot of people, and there's a few reasons for that. It's a lot of work, and you don't get paid for it, but that's just community organizing in general, and that is some of the most important work that you can ever do. Also, over the years, lawmakers have chosen time and time again to side with the bosses, the corporations, and not the working class. Think back to the potential rail workers' strike in 2020. Union bureaucrats were intimidated into submission by old laws. Well, I'm not a bureaucrat. I'm a worker with a story and a life and a vision of our collective future that has a party for the working class. One thing about unions is they are the people in them, not the people at the top. It is our job to push and keep pushing for our voices to not only be listened to, but valued. Workers want to fight. Workers want to work. And we do look to union leadership, but the more the rank and file organizes, the more power we have. We can't reform the Democrats, but we can reform our unions and our workplaces. Politicians on the picket line look really nice, but it's just another photo op. Right now, nurses are striking. Organizing committees around the country are meeting secretly to push forward the working class agenda and waking up the class consciousness. Democrats have no backbone. We've heard that all evening. It's why the Supreme Court is failing us, why we still have no socialized healthcare or more solid workplace protections and so many other things. They could have stepped up and passed legislation, but they are in the pockets of the elite as well as the Republicans. After speaking at the June meeting, which connected a lot of dots for me, well, it didn't connect them, it just lit them up in a different way. that I hadn't seen before. I decided that getting to know more about the socialist alternative is the next step in my organizing journey, and I'm really looking forward to learning more and being more involved in the revolutionary socialist movement. Thank you all so much, and organize your workplaces.
Thanks, Sarah, so much. And speaking of organizing your workplaces, our next speaker is working to organize Amazon's largest air hub in the world in Northern Kentucky. They've been working alongside dozens of their coworkers with petitions, job actions, and most recently, a strike against Amazon's union busting. Worker, organizer, socialist, Josh Crow.
My name is Josh Kroll. I'm a member of Socialist Alternative Cincinnati branch and a worker at Amazon's KCVG air hub located in Northern Kentucky. KCVG is Amazon's largest air hub and most important facility in their logistics network, processing 45 to 60% of all prime packages. In the next 10 years, it will be doubled in size with 10,000 workers moving upwards of 80% of prime packages. 4,000 coworkers and I have been fighting for a union for almost 2 years around bold demands like a $30 an hour starting wage, 180 hours of paid time off, translation rights, free on-site childcare, and union representation at disciplinary meetings to end favoritism and discrimination that me and my coworkers face. In April, me and my coworkers affiliated to the Teamsters Union, seeing the necessity in joining with 1.3 million other Teamsters to win our fight against Amazon. We had led an independent campaign before joining the Teamsters and won many victories as a small grassroots union. We fought for translation rights, having over 1,000 coworkers sign a petition for guaranteed translation in all communications, having translation and union representation at disciplinary meetings, and for free on-site English language classes. Right? When Amazon responded by trying to stop hiring African immigrants, over 50 workers and community supporters occupied the ramp entrance, demanding translation and an end to discrimination at Amazon. Immigrant workers and native-born workers joined together to fight back against the disgusting practices of Amazon, and we now have translation technology for 140 different languages, written communication in English, Spanish, and French, better access to translation during training, and Amazon began hiring immigrant workers again. Last month at KCVG, workers were able to take part in National Prime Day actions by going on strike together in the same week as our Teamsters brothers and sisters in California, New York, and Skokie's DIL-7 facility right here in Chicagoland. This is the type of national fight that will be needed to take on Amazon and win $30 an hour and a union for all Amazon workers. Organizing Amazon is a key task for the labor movement given the strategic importance of the logistics industry. Serious work should have been done over a decade ago to organize Amazon before it had reached the scale that it has today. It is a failure of the union bureaucracy that we are just now starting to see a national movement coalesce, and the Teamsters putting forward the resources needed to unionize Amazon everywhere. This political failure is further expressed by Sean O'Brien, the president of the Teamsters, speaking at the RNC and failing to call out the anti-worker politicians or their billionaire donors. By showing up and not using his time to denounce the dangerous right-wing populism of Trump, O'Brien creates more space for the right wing to pretend to be pro-worker. But even the left-leaning labor bureaucracy falls into the trap of establishment politics. Sean Fain, president of the United Auto Workers, was seen as a leader in the fight against the war in Gaza when the union was one of the first to pass a ceasefire resolution. But just a few weeks later, Fain announced that the UAW was endorsing Biden for president, a huge contradiction with the ceasefire resolution and a missed opportunity to place real demands on Biden to end the support for the war. Both of these leaders make the mistake of not taking up an independent working class position. Unions, as organizations made by and for workers, should take up political positions that are for the benefit of the entire working class. Most unions today support either the Democrats or the Republicans, but how can politicians who are bought and paid for by the bosses ever be on the side of workers? All working class people have a common interest in the betterment of our living standards. We share the same class enemy, the bosses, who exploit us and with their profits purchase political servants in both parties. The bosses have two parties, workers need one of our own.
That's right.
A necessary step in the creation of a workers' party is the union splitting from the Democrats and starting a workers' party. But for this to happen, workers within their unions will have to force their leadership to take up this task or remove them and elect new leadership that will. Such leadership must be accountable to the rank and file through democratic mechanisms, like leadership making the average wage of the workers they represent, workers having the right to recall that leadership, and workers having a real say in the direction of their unions, especially around big political questions like endorsing politicians. As a socialist, I see my role as building up working class organization and confidence to fight for and win the world that we deserve. Trump and Harris both failed to provide a real path forward for working class people to have the things that we deserve. Working class people are turning towards the labor movement as a potential avenue for change, and I think it can be when it's placed on militant footing and connects workers' struggle with social struggle. Yeah. Unions, and specifically leaders like Sean Fain, Sean O'Brien, and Sarah Nelson should begin building a labor party now. Sean Fain and the UAW have called for a general strike in 2028, and they should use this call to begin organizing not only a general strike, but a new party today. This party can be used as a fighting vehicle against the far right and a home for the growing labor movement to gain even more power to build for bolder around bolder demands like Medicare for all, a worker-led just green transition, or an end to the war in Gaza. We need independent working class organizations to be able to fight the right wing, fight for what we deserve, and one day transform the world into a place free of exploitation, discrimination, and suffering. What we need is a socialist world, solidarity.
Thanks so much, Josh. That we're not the only country that has an election this year. This is a big election year around the world. Over 1 billion people will be hitting the polls. Our next speaker is going to be talking about the recent elections in the UK and the massive protests of tens of thousands of people, young people, union workers that have erupted against the far right. So let's give it up for a member of International Socialist Alternative from Liverpool, Sarah Guardiola.
Thanks, everyone. The recent elections in the UK have shown the absolute discontent with the two mainstream parties, which, like in the US, only stand for the interests of the billionaires and big businesses. After 14 years of Conservative government, they have been overwhelmingly rejected due to Brexit, austerity, the pandemic, corruption and economic failures. The Labour Party, while it won the election, had their worst results in this century. They have been incapable of infusing people with their shift to the right with pro-establishment, pro-war politics, and their failure to oppose the genocidal war in Gaza. The discontent towards Labour opened up a space for the Green Party, an independent pro-Palestine left candidates who won significant victories, which exposed the idea put forward by Labour that pro-establishment, pro-war politics are necessary to win, and highlighted the strength of the Palestinian solidarity movement and the ongoing popularity of left ideas. On the other hand, we have also seen a rise of far-right populism and the Trumpification of British politics, which echoes a similar dangerous trend taking place internationally as reactionary figures exploit the crisis of this system to whip up hatred of migrants and other oppressed people. The Conservative Party culture wars against refugees and trans people are an example of that. But with the collapse of the Conservative, we also saw the dangerous rise of the far-right party Reform UK. Reform UK elections results and the Tories' right-wing culture wars rhetoric to distract from the cost of living crisis, the crisis in the healthcare system, and the growing misery for the working class majority have emboldened and boosted the confidence of far-right forces. The most recent example of this threat are the far-right riots that happened across the UK, which targeted mosques, asylum seeker centers, and set on fire hotels that were housing refugees. The riots erupted after a 17-year-old entered a dance class where he stabbed and murdered three young girls and critically wounded several others. Following the attack, far-right figures like Tommy Robinson and Andrew Tate and Nigel Farage, leader of the right-wing party Reform UK, spread lies on social media claiming that the attacker was a Muslim immigrant. In reality, he was born in Wales and from a Christian background. While the riots were terrifying, the response that we have seen after them is extremely inspiring. Local communities have come together to defend themselves and repair the damage done. Tens of thousands of anti-racists mobilized against planned far riots or attacks in which far-right groups were outnumbered or did not even appear in cities like Liverpool or London. Thank you. The question on everybody's minds now is, why has this happened now? Why is the far right on the rise? The whole capitalist establishment is guilty for these sins. This is a system in which racism, gender inequality, and violence are not just perpetrated, but are in fact a crucial tool to continue its rule by dividing us. It's also not a coincidence that these far right groups managed to gain an inroad into some of the poorest towns across the UK. They exploit genuine political discontent towards mainstream capitalist parties across the globe and scapegoat minorities for all capitalism's ills. The primary target of this misdirected anger are black people, immigrants, but particularly Muslim immigrants, along with members of the LGBTQ+ community. They feed off these conditions which exist, but those conditions, joblessness, general capitalist crisis and deprivation come from capitalism and the capitalist politicians, which is why our movement has to center on confronting them and the system they serve. And what has the Labour government done in response to these far-right riots? Today, the Labour government announced a major surge in deportation and promised to reopen the detention centres. Point it. They also claim a victory for the police for deterring the far right and has announced a new police unit to deal with the unrest. But the new police units introduced by Starmer will not stop the far right and could in the future be used against workers, students, climate campaigners and all those that looking to fight back against capitalist destruction. They want to make out that the mass anti-racist mobilization played no role, it was all the police's job. Well, we know what the truth is. We cannot rely on Labour, or the police, or the courts to stop the far right, nor can we rely on them to stop the violence against women and girls. We can only rely on our own strength to end this crisis. So how can we stop the growth of the far right? What sort of fiber do we need, and how can we build it? Only a mass anti-racist movement of the working class can stop them. But it should also be linked to the fight for a political alternative that offers an end to the cost of living and housing crisis and the breakdown of public services. We need to build a mass movement against the far right which can counter them on the streets, in the workplaces and communities. This includes mass demonstrations to defend the rights of refugees, queer people and all the oppressed, but also being prepared to resist attacks from the bosses against all workers. There cannot be unity with establishment politicians of any party. We must expose the abhorrent lies of the far right, the housing crisis, stagnant wages, and the deterioration of public services were not caused by Muslims or migrants, but by a system that prioritizes profit above all else, capitalism. The trade unions have a key role to play linking this to a fight-back which can unite the multiracial, multigender working class in struggle. Trade unions must be mobilizing and organizing in every community to defend them and build up a united struggle for jobs, homes, and services for all. This means fighting for good quality, unionized jobs, mass council house building, and for living wages. They must also actively fight for the right of asylum seekers to settle, work, and have decent housing. This can show who our real enemies are, the bosses and profiteers, not refugees and migrants. All our movements need to be linked together by building a new left party based on the struggles and socialist policies. An example of the potential for this was the Enough is Enough initiative in Britain by the leadership of the Rail Workers Union and Communication Workers Union. This initiative was in the context of like British labor movement beginning to fight back against the cost of living crisis in 2022. It had a limited program of very radical reforms and was enormously inspiring. 700,000 people signed up to get involved, which would be the equivalent to like 3.5 million people in the US. But of course, the same trade union bureaucrats that, who took this initiative did nothing to develop it. At the moment, Socialist Alternative in England, Wales and Scotland is making a call for a national conference of resistance which can group together anti-racist trade unionists, the left independents who were elected from the movements against the genocidal war in Gaza, and all those seeking to build a real alternative. To eliminate the conditions that allow far-right ideas to spread, the capitalist system itself must be overthrown. Capitalism cannot be reformed to remove inequality, oppression, and exploitation. As long as the system prioritizes profit over people, there will be those who seek to exploit divisions and scapegoat the most vulnerable in society. We need a fundamental change in the way in which society is run. We need socialism, where wealth and resources are publicly owned and democratically planned collectively in the interests of the majority. Socialist Alternative stands for a fundamentally different kind of society to capitalism, a socialist one in which racism and all forms of oppression, violence, exploitation, poverty, war, and climate catastrophe have no room to exist. Capitalism organizes internationally, and so do we. We're part of International Socialist Alternative, fighting back on every country for revolutionary change and the democratic socialist society that is run by and for working class people. Join us today on this struggle.